You're listening to Amy Keeps It Creepy, the podcast where I share my obsession with true crime and the paranormal with you. I'm your host, Amy Brooks. A crazy wife who keeps battery acid in her purse. A husband who has the hots for his married secretary. A mistress that hired a hitman to behead her lover's wife. This is the twisted and crazy story of the Linda Thompson murder. Hi, creepsters. Hopefully you listened to my last episode, Preston Castle, where I talk about the murder of Anna Corbin. Wait, you didn't hear it? Oh, you must not be subscribed to Amy Keeps It Creepy. Okay, this is really easy. Go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you podcast and subscribe to Amy Keeps It Creepy. Great, you will never miss an episode. And while you're at it, please give me a 5-star rating and leave a written review. I would really, really appreciate it. And check me out on Instagram at Creepy Podcast. I post there every day. And also check out the website, creepypodcast.com, where I post news and photos of the episodes. In Turkey, shortly after the end of World War I, a British military officer named Lewis Thompson met a pretty young woman named Lydia Shevchenko, a nurse who had fled her native Russia during the revolution. The two fell in love and married in 1922. Little did they know at the time, this relationship would end up in a nightmare of cheating, revenge, and murder. The couple immigrated to the United States in 1928, settling in Orchard Lake, a pretty swanky area at the time, located just outside of Detroit, Michigan. The couple became very wealthy. They opened a laundry which expanded into a highly profitable chain, and Lewis also found success as an auto dealer. However, money did not find this couple happiness. His newfound fortune brought him luxuries and the attention of the ladies. Ladies that were not his wife. Lydia was a simple, pious woman who didn't want to enjoy the couple's wealth too much. So, when Lewis happily spent their money on the high life, Lydia continued to work long hours in the laundry. And she would harp on her husband for his extravagance. Yeah, that's not sexy. You don't want to be the naggy wife. It's a trap. That can only end one way. She should have taken a break from the laundromat and gone on a sexy trip to Hawaii or a tawdry weekend in Vegas with her man. Instead, she was satisfied complaining to him, which caused a deep estrangement between the two. Frankly, I'm not sure how compatible these people were to begin with. They seem very different. Isn't that the dream to fall in love, make a ton of money, and enjoy it together? Sounds good to me. But alas, Lewis did what a lot of guys do when they are married to shrews. He got some on the side with his secretary. Yeah, I'm big on my husband having very unattractive assistants. Total double standard that way. I don't mind having a bunch of hot guys around me on my crew, but yeah, when it comes to men, very unattractive assistants. And when we had a nanny, believe me, I hired the most grandmotherly types you can imagine. I'm not going to be that Hollywood story. I did have one kind of hot, young, redheaded nanny with giant boobs that I had to keep my eyes on. She was cute, and she loved my son. I would come home, and he would be nestled into her giant boobs with this big smile on his face. He is for sure going to grow up to become a boob man. He won't know where it comes from, but it was his bodacious nanny. There are so many things you can never tell your kids. No, I don't think Ms. Vanderman would have seduced my husband. She was a sweetheart, and the hope is, of course, that your husband won't succumb to any lust that he may be harboring. Yeah, always hire the grandma types if you can.
Although, didn't Schwarzenegger have a love child with the nanny who was not attractive, like seriously not attractive? Maria was so much hotter than her. Maybe all of us in relationships with men are screwed and horny guys will do what horny guys will do with whomever. I've always said that men are as faithful as their options. Ann Lewis had the hots for his secretary. How original. Helen Budnick, the ever-willing secretary, was also married. And I guess things went deeper than sex pretty quickly. The two fell in love. Wives always find out, though, don't they? Lydia found out and kicked Lewis out of the house. They reconciled a few times, but Lewis was always found being unfaithful. And he always went back to Helen. What's unclear in this story is if Helen was still employed in their business or not. Because nowadays, you can't just fire the personal assistant because she gives your husband a blowy. Because said personal assistant, however much a slut she is and frankly deserved being fired, will sue you for a myriad of things. Which, don't get me started on that, because those sluts make it harder for the women out there truly struggling with sexual harassment in the workforce. I have some personal Me Too stories that would destroy a few careers. Big names. But conversely, I have also seen starlets actively seeking out powerful men to advance their careers. Those chicks are not victims. They are looking for career opportunities that their agents may or may not know about. And don't confuse my words. I feel for the ladies who were raped and exploited. That is terrible and illegal. However, there is another group of very eager ladies with zero morals trying to advance their careers, taking jobs away from legitimate, trained, and talented actors who don't want to get a job on their knees or backs. Believe me, I had to end more than a few friendships with fellow actors who found the best career strategy was sleeping their way to the top. Oh my God, I have the best stories. Maybe I'll write a tell-all book someday. I'm not sure how I could write it, though, and not get sued. Oh, yeah. I wonder if people would believe me anyway, because some of the players are beloved, popular celebrities. Because strategic effing does work. I couldn't do it, though. Part of me maybe wishes I could. Oh, no, I don't. In 1944... Lewis asked his wife for a divorce. The request did not go well with Lydia. With her old-school, ultra-conservative values, she fiercely refused to even consider the idea. She still claimed to love her husband. And in any case, marriage for her was truly a case of till death do you part. Be careful what you wish for. Lydia started obsessing big time over her husband and his extramarital activities. She hired no less than 3 detective agencies to shadow her husband. She had fallen into the habit of snooping on her husband's every move herself, too. I guess she started tapping into some of that wealth of hers because private detectives are not cheap. Of course, wasn't Lydia doing what any of us would have done if our spouse was cheating? Snoop. Look through calls, texts, social media, bills. Because having an affair is not cheap. You can see the wining and dining clearly on a credit card statement. On March 31st, 1945, Lydia tailed Lewis to a Detroit nightclub where he was having dinner with some friends, including female friends. Apparently, the woman, they were really just friends. However, Lydia imagined the worst. I think she saw women dressed up in a swanky nightclub, sitting with her husband, and she lost it. She stormed up to Lewis's table and confronted the women. Oh, man. What did she say to them? I would have loved to be a fly on the wall for that. Things escalated quickly, however. Lydia pulled a vial of acid out of her purse and threw it at them, burning their faces and legs. Oh my God. My mind is flooded with questions. Okay. So she obviously planned this. This creepy bitch bought acid. I wouldn't even know what kind of acid to buy. And remember, this is 1945, before the internet where you can look up specifics on how to hurt, kill, maim anyone. I mean, what? Did she ask the dude at the hardware store what kind of acid to buy? That doesn't look suspicious. And then she poured acid carefully into a vial and stuck it in her purse. See, I would be scared that the vial would spill in my purse or something, which totally happened to me with a trial-sized vial of Miss Dior. Ruined my handbag. But that was not freaking acid. That was perfume. And more importantly, Lydia was never charged with any crime. Why the hell wasn't this nut thrown in jail? Was this just an acceptable thing for a crazed, jealous wife to do in the 40s? A crime of passion? How could it be? She scarred people with acid. She should have been locked up because crazy bitches like this never stop once they've crossed lines like this. And Lydia didn't stop either. Lewis fled to Miami to escape his crazy-ass wife, who I guess he was unable to divorce without her consent. In Miami, he met up with Helen. Lydia found them. I guess those private eyes really do work. She confronted the pair in their hotel room, telling Lewis that he had to go back to her or, quote, "I'll haunt you all of my life. I'll kill myself." I'm sure he was like, go ahead, do it. That would solve a major problem. They didn't have kids. It sounds awful, but Lydia dying would have been a clean break for him. She pulled out a vial of pills from her purse. Oh God, another vial. Was it the same kind of vial as the acid? This time, it was filled with pills, though, and not acid. She downed them. I guess while they watched drama. Oh, they were totally just sitting waiting for the pills to work. She was such a creepy bitch. Storming into their room like that and attempting to kill herself? Poor Lydia. What did she think was going to happen exactly? This big romantic moment when her husband swooped her up into his arms. "Please, babe, don't do it. I love you." That didn't happen. And Lydia didn't die. She just barfed up the pills. When she left the bathroom after throwing up everywhere, and you totally know she upchecked all over the bathroom to ruin it for Helen, she went out to the balcony in another attempt to win back her man. "Leave Helen or I'll jump," she said. Oh yeah, that didn't work either. The new couple just stared at Lydia, waiting for her to make good on her threat. But she didn't jump. Of course she didn't jump. What was next was surely an awkward next few moments as Lydia walked out of the couple's hotel room, leaving them with threats and barf. I suppose Lydia won that battle, though, because it ruined any kind of sexy time the couple was going to have in Miami, that's for sure. Lewis returned to Michigan and moved all of his belongings out of the house that they shared. During this, Lydia threatened suicide again. I'm sure this didn't get the reaction that she wanted either. There was no way he was going back to her after all of this crazy. So how could she get his attention? Lydia then threatened to disfigure Helen for life. Okay, we know from her previous acid-throwing incident that if she says she will scar you for life, she will probably scar you for life. She's not playing. This, of course, infuriated Lewis. Lydia continued stalking her husband, but she confided to friends that she was becoming terrified that someone was spying on her during these outings. She began talking of her death, either by her own hand or someone else's. She bought a gun. Lydia told anyone who would listen that her life was in danger. On the morning of October 11th, 1945, Lydia had breakfast out with two friends. The two women later said that she had expressed fears that she might be murdered, but in such a vague way that they didn't take her words seriously. "Oh yeah, I think I'm going to be murdered. Nice knowing you past the mimosas." I would have taken my friend seriously if she told me she was going to be murdered, especially your crazy ass friend. We love them, but let's be honest, they're the most likely ones to be murdered. Around 1 p.m., Lydia entered a grocery store where she was a regular customer. She went up to the owner clutching a small piece of paper. She asked him, quote, "Will you look up the man whose name is on this paper?" Unfortunately, the owner did not even bother to see what the name was. He merely waved her off, saying he was too busy at the moment. That's hysterical. I think he probably had run-ins with her before. She was a regular customer, right? "Your tomatoes are too soft. This egg has a crack in it. Look up the man whose name is on this paper." "Get out of my face, lady," was probably what he said. Lydia became frantic. "But you've got to do it. I'm scared to death. I've got to know this. You've got to find this man for me," she said. He continued to dismiss her. I bet she looked like a raving lunatic. She finally gave up and left, stopping at the apartment of a friend, Harriet Steele. By this point, she was practically in hysterics, crying and saying she feared for her life. "Everything that causes the trouble," she wailed, "is on this slip of paper." That's what she said. She added that if she didn't find out who this man was, "maybe I will not see you tomorrow." Harriet didn't look at the name. "I think I would have looked. This is a very curious thing, your friend showing up like this hysterical. Or was it just normal when you're Lydia's friend?" "What is it now, Lydia?" Harriet just tried consoling her friend as best she could. Later that day, Lydia sent a telegram to her sister in Russia. The message read, quote, "Send your address and mailing package soon. Wire immediately." The exact meaning of this message remains a mystery. No one knows what exactly was in this package. This cryptic telegram was Lydia Thompson's last known action. Her car was found in a downtown parking lot in Pontiac, Michigan. It was unknown who had driven the car or parked it there. Eventually, Lydia's almost headless body was found by mushroom pickers in some woods a few miles outside of Pontiac. Lydia's murder had been a brutal one. She had been knocked unconscious and then stabbed many times with both a knife and an ice pick. A knife and then an ice pick? That's unusual. It almost sounds like more than one person. Why switch weapons? Unless the person was torturing her. Well, there was in fact a third weapon used on her. A hatchet was used to chop away at her neck, nearly decapitating her. And when I say nearly, her head was off, if not for a couple strands of flesh. The doctor who performed the autopsy believed there was a lapse of 4 to 5 days between her first wounds and the death blow to her neck, adding an additional layer of strangeness to this mystery. Yeah, she was tortured. This was personal, or maybe even mob style. Authorities believed she had not been killed where she was found, but the site of her death is unknown. Her home showed no sign of robbery or struggle of any sort. However, Lydia's gun, ration book, driver's license, and keys had all disappeared. Found on her desk was a letter she had written, which said, quote, "If after this day you don't see me and you don't hear anything of me, then go on, Jefferson, and find a man by the name of Peroni and ask him where I am. This is the doings of my husband. He is tired of me and wants to marry her. Everything that belongs to me, I leave to you." The letter was addressed to her father, Andrew Chevchenko, who was living in Detroit. For whatever reason, Lydia had kept him secret from everyone, including her husband. Why wouldn't she tell her husband that Chevchenko had immigrated from Russia? It's very odd. Chevchenko told investigators that he knew nothing of the meaning of this letter or anything else about Lydia's recent doings. Police found three men named Peroni who lived on Jefferson Avenue. That's interesting. I've never met a Peroni in my life, and there happens to be three on one street. all three Peronis denied knowing Lydia. And as far as anyone could tell, they were all being truthful. Also found in the house was Lydia's diary. That must have been a fun read. She was such a downer of a lady. And it's true. It was full of page after page of her despair over her shattered marriage, with sinister hints of doom added. "I shall drag two people into my death with me," she wrote on one page. You don't think she was crazy enough to get herself murdered, to take down her own husband and lover? I would have thought that was maybe a possibility, but come on. The prolonged and brutal nature of her murder makes me think otherwise. Unless she hired some psycho to kill her, and he ended up being even more of a psycho, and he tortured her. Still, I doubt it. Lewis, of course, became the prime suspect in the murder. A carpenter who did work for Lydia told investigators that 3 weeks before her death, she confided in him that Lewis had attacked her with an ice pick. The man quoted her as saying, "Don't be surprised if they find me in the country with an ice pick through me." That's kind of on the nose specific. I wonder if it was the carpenter. He had access to her, and he just set up the whole ice pick and husband thing in motion. He could have known that an ice pick was used if he had used it himself to kill her. And you never know. Maybe she had something going on with the carpenter, too. Ooh, it's a mystery. No evidence other than the strange note and the carpenter's testimony was found against Lewis and Helen. They even passed lie detector tests, and they both had alibis for the time of Lydia's death. People still thought they had something to do with the murder, though. They both remained under a dark cloud of suspicion. Of course, they had a motive. Lydia had been terrorizing them, stalking them. They could have totally hired a hit on Lydia. Anyone who hires a killer with any kind of brain creates an alibi for themselves so they can distance themselves from the murder. Isn't that the point of hiring a killer? Keep your hands clean. Look innocent. So this is what I think the biggest twist in the story is. 2 weeks after Lydia died, her father, remember the one who found the strange note giving him everything and implicating Lydia's husband? The same dad no one knew about before? Suddenly leaves Detroit, saying that he was going, quote, somewhere that is more pleasant. I guess he had no interest in finding his daughter's murderer. Strange. I bet he took Lydia's money with him, though. Police received a cable from a woman believed to be Lydia's sister in Russia. The message said that their father had been dead for many years. Whoever this man was, who found the note and fled with the cash, was not Lydia's father. Was it her killer? The puzzle only deepened when investigators learned that in the last months of her life, the normally tight-fisted Lydia had been spending money at an astonishing rate. In her final weeks, she took well over $6,000 from her bank account and borrowed from a friend an additional $1,500. No one ever determined where all this money went. Police heard stories claiming that Lydia had been paying gang members to beat up her husband's lady friends. But even this would not account for all of her expenditures. I mean, how much was it really to beat up lady friends back in 1945? And it never happened. So did the gang screw Lydia out of the cash? Yeah, sure, we will beat up your husband's lovers. We'll need cash first, though. I mean, what is she going to do? It's not like you're going to get a receipt from paid thugs. 4 months after Lydia's murder, Lewis married Helen Butnick. She gave birth to a son that November. The newlyweds prepared to settle down in Thompson's luxurious Orchard Park house. The same house he had shared with murdered wife number one, Lydia. What kind of creepy bitch was this Helen? I would never live in my husband's dead wife's house. It must have been a really nice place.
Helen did have it thoroughly clean, though.
And while the house was being cleaned up, mysteriously, a package was found behind the refrigerator. It contained Lydia's missing keys, license, and ration book. The gun Lydia had purchased was also found behind some pipes in one of the closets. Police claimed they had searched those same places immediately after Lydia's death and had found nothing. Sounds like a setup. Because I don't think that Lewis, if he were indeed the killer, would have brought those items back into the house. That would be stupid. Unless they had some kind of fingerprints on them of the killer, if he had hired a killer, in case the hired killer tried to screw him somehow. Lewis told the police he was becoming increasingly convinced that Lydia had paid to have herself killed in the hope of framing him for the murder. Oh my God. That's what I initially thought too. I don't know if you're Downton Abbey fans. I am. But if you are, you'll remember that John Bates' psycho ex-wife killed herself and framed him for it so he would be charged for her murder. It's a devious revenge plot. A bit too kamikaze for my taste, though. There has to be a better way to get revenge. Lewis had some additional theories as well. He thought that Lydia had become the victim of a sex maniac. Helen, on the other hand, was quoted as saying, "Lydia was arranging to have us killed, only to be murdered by her own hitman." Interesting. Then a woman named Laura Riddle came forward. She told authorities that her boyfriend, Stanley Ankulowitz, an ex-con with mob ties, told her that Lewis had hired him to compromise Lydia. What does that mean? Like, have sex with her? Compromise? Ruin her reputation? Later, Lewis offered him $10,000 to dispose of her entirely. He further claimed that he and an unnamed Italian guy, mobster, began to blackmail Lydia. Oh, wow, that would explain the large amounts of money that she withdrew from her account and the loan from her friend. The police arrested Stanley and Lewis, but they were soon released because, yet another twist, and this one is a doozy, Stanley had apparently made up the entire story because he was actually married and only told his girlfriend the lie to scare her off and keep her quiet about the affair. He didn't want his wife and three kids to find out. So he was like, "I told my girlfriend that I was cheating with who didn't know about my wife and kids, that I was hired for a murder so she would break up with me and not tell my wife because she would be scared of me." There have to be easier ways to break up. Or how about this? Don't have affairs? It never ends up well. You will get caught. This whole story is surely a lesson. Be careful who you marry and don't cheat. Well, police weren't sure that Stanley's story was actually a lie. Authorities made it pretty clear in the press that although they could not make charges stick against Lewis and Helen, they were in no way exonerated. Oh man, I am definitely getting a mobster hitman vibe from this story. Was Lydia murdered by an assassin hired by her husband? By a hitman she herself had hired to murder Lewis and Helen? By a hitman she herself had hired to slay her in the hopes that her now hated husband would get the blame? By the Russian secret police? By mobsters? By some random unknown lunatic or sex-crazed guy? And where was Lydia spending all that money? Who the hell was Peroni? Who was the man named in the paper Lydia was waving about just before her death? Why was she secretive about her father moving to the United States? Was he her father? If not, who was he? So many questions.
and zero answers. Yes, my creepsters, the murder of Lydia Thompson remains an unsolved mystery. One that I doubt anyone will ever solve.
I'm thinking an evil genius pulled this off because there are so many smoking guns here.
Or maybe the answer is simple. Lydia was murdered by her nemesis, the sexy secretary she had threatened to disfigure.
Helen wins in this story. She took Lydia's husband, house, and possibly her life. Perhaps Helen hired a hitman fed up with the threats and the stalking and the drama that would never end. Because Lydia would have never given Lewis a divorce, never left them alone.
There was only one thing stopping Helen from having the dreamy life she wanted with her new man. Getting rid of a certain problem, Lydia.
What do you think?
Do you have a creepy true crime or paranormal story that you would like to share on Amy Keeps It Creepy? I know you do. Please email a brief description of your story to info@creepypodcast.com.
I can't wait to get creeped out.
Thank you for listening.
Toxic content.